Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. And look, man, I'm trying to recover from an absolutely devastating loss. The Lakers collapse in the second. I wanted to see how long I could carry that thing for. I tweeted that out from Silver Screen. I was running Silver Screen tonight. And there were people like, dude, it's only preseason. Thanks, guys. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like their first time ever hearing you.
Me? Sarcastic? What? today's show is going to be brought to you in part by Vivid Seats and Mizuma. More on those guys in a bit. Today we're going to talk about the game that Pete was at and that I was watching. I'd be lying if I didn't say I also had an eye on the playoff game that was going on, but... You know, you can do those things in the preseason. But Pete was there, and he was there. And so we're going to start by talking about the vibe inside Staples Center, which I think is going to be something worth noting. I thought the fans were really good. And they carried through the TV from baseball, based on what I was watching. And then we're going to talk about pace, and I think those two things kind of go hand in hand. Section 2 is going to be about the shooting guard situation, and then Section 3, we're going to talk about the center situation. I was almost a Freudian slip because I was going to say shit show, but it was center situation. let's dive into this thing, though. You were at the game. I was at the game in San Diego. The game was, I think, too ugly for fans to really get behind in San Diego, but... In Staples Center tonight, the game was played a little bit cleaner. Denver was very visibly tired. They've been on the road for a while now. But the Lakers took advantage when the players that matter were on the court. And I really thought that the Lakers fans, the fan base that was there for the game, really rose to the occasion and made me think that the Lakers might be kind of tough to beat at home.
Man, the pace of the team is just wild. They were really pop in person. And there were, you know, the ball movement tonight reached the point of absurdity on a couple of possessions where they definitely overpassed. Right. But I mean, that's the type of thing. Luke even said it in the post game where, like, in the second game of the season, you totally take that. You can see the basic instincts of the team, that like their very baseline, what they do without knowing a ton of the offense and all of that. Like, they really, like, the ball just really popped, man. And just their pace is just wild.
Yeah, it was when the Lakers. So a couple things that I noticed from game one to game two here in the preseason, I thought, for one thing, teams that make lateral turnovers are screwed. those are just going to be 2 points, if not three, going the other way. But the other thing that I noticed, and I thought it was a cool adjustment to watch kind of happen from one game to another, was JaVale McGee, I thought, did a much better job in this game of rebounding and outletting. And now I know that's something that, you know, it might be kind of, you never know, maybe that was just something that we noticed because of the results of the fast breaks. But I thought that really showed through that JaVale was doing a much better job of rotating his body while he was getting these rebounds so that he could find the closest outlet to him.
Yeah, no, he did a good job. The Lakers did a much better job overall on the boards. I think they got out-rebounded by 13 in the previous game. I haven't seen the final numbers for tonight, but when the guys who were mattered were in the game, it was an even rebounding situation. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll get some help when Lonzo comes back. But, yeah, no, JaVale was just really good overall. He had four blocks, I believe. You know, he protected the rim. He was good in his drop coverages. I thought the Lakers in total just... they screwed up less. They, you know, in terms of in the first game, there were a lot of two guys go to one nugget, mm-hmm. leaving another guy wide open, miscommunication type thing. And, you know, it was really good to see them clean that up a bit again with the guys that mattered in the second half, you know, especially after that first unit came out, even aside from LeBron, you know, kind of went downhill defensively for sure. And Zoo was killing me, but yeah, JaVale did a really nice job.
Poor Zoo. We'll talk about Zoo bots in the third segment, but My patience is up with that poor guy. I wanna quickly, though, before we move on to other subjects here, regarding the pace, My question is whether or not you feel like this is sustainable. Like, do you think that, because they're playing at an insane rate, like craziness.
It's an interesting question. Is superficially, it seems like that would be hard, right? Like that would be exhausting. For one, it's more exhausting for the other team that is not used to playing that way than it is for the team that is used to it. And I would argue in some ways that those are the least impactful minutes. Like if you have to choose between running up and down the court and running through screens and setting screens and the physicality of a half court type of setting, I think it's probably better and less exhausting to be running rather than getting beat up. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, I remember when I, to make a tortured analogy, when I coached football, there's this one team that we played against that just pressed and pressed and pressed the entire game. And it, like, it didn't matter if you went up big on them early, they just pressed and pressed and pressed. And that was what they did. And I talked to the coach about that, and they were a good team. And I talked to him about his philosophies, and he was like, look, like, how much time do you spend on running your offense in practice? And I told him, you know, 35-40% of the time, maybe. He was like, when you play us, how much do you actually run your offense? I'm like, 5% of the time, if that, because we're always trapping, we're always running, we're always doing that, right? And so his attitude was like, we do this the way we played today every single day of practice, of games, and all of that. And you do this twice a year when you play us. So we're going to be more prepared to play this style than you are. And I, that always stuck with me, right? And so to me, it's really important to have an identity. And the more unique your identity can be while still being effective, the, I think, better regular season team you are at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, identity is absolutely key here. I just, pro teams, NBA teams are really good at handling pressure typically. And it's tough with the Nuggets because they're so, like, Jokic is so tall that when they were trapping him, he was just throwing the ball over the trap. So it didn't
really matter. I'm not necessarily advocating trapping, pressing, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But just like the pace of it. I think, Anthony, we know what type of team this is going to be already stylistically.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And to the point on trapping, Luke Walton said after the game something along the lines of, and again, I had other stuff going on. I was kind of getting ready for this and listening offhandedly to Luke, but he said something after the game about they were letting the ball go kind of wherever Denver wanted the ball to go, right? Whether, I don't know if he was referring to dribble or pass or whatever. That's the tough thing with this specific matchup, is that Jokic is so tall that even when they trap him, it was just, he would just throw the ball over the top of the trap. And to that point even further, Plumlee had such a big game, both games that they played against him, because they were just throwing lobs over the top of the interior defense. So we'll see how they handle that. I think it's something that's going to take a little bit of time. This entire exercise of trying to analyze what we've seen from these two games is kind of is a fool's errand. But we are starting to see, and I think the larger point that you just made a second ago is we know what kind of team they're trying to be, and I think that's all we can really take from these two games so far.
Very much so.
All right, we're going to take another quick second here, to pay some bills. When we come back, I want to talk about the big change in the starting lineup from Game 1 to Game 2. Josh Hart played well in the starting lineup, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has continued to struggle thus far in preseason, so we'll talk about that dynamic. Today's show is brought to you in part by VividSeats.com. Look, being a sports fan is all about building those memories over the course of your fandom. If you're a Dodgers fan, for example, and you were in the building for the Dodgers, Freudian slip, as this is a Lakers show, but if you were in the building to watch the Dodgers beat the Rockies in a single game elimination game there at Chavez Ravine so that they didn't have to go through extra innings in Chicago before playing a division series, then that's something that you're always going to remember forever. I have friends who took their dad, who has been a lifelong Dodgers fan, to a World Series game. game last year. And really, that's all that matters. They're never going to forget that moment. And if you're looking to build those memories, there is no better way to put yourself in those situations than to go through Vivid Seats and use the promo code LOCKEDON to get $20 off of your purchase of $200 or more. So again, go to Vivid Seats, find them in the App Store. If you're on the if you're using an iPhone, go through the Android App Store. If you're going through a browser, enter vividseats.com/app and then use the promo code LOCKEDON to again get $20 off your purchase of $200 or more. Make those memories and make those memories through Vivid Seats. So here's where I found myself at the end of the game. Basically, I think Josh Hart looked really good with the starters. And I don't know if that's really good by comparison because of how KCP has looked thus far in the two games that we've seen him. But he looked really good with the starters. And also, he looked really good with the starters that he was with because there weren't many other rebounders on the court with him. Like, they were not focused very well on boxing out. And Josh Hart, that's one of the things. He enjoys the physicality of the game. I think when Lonzo Ball comes back, though, and you have that rebounding presence on the court, Josh Hart becomes a little less important. But I think for me, when you're figuring out, and this is where starting versus finishing and all that stuff, like that's where it's really easy to get lost in the weeds. All that matters to me is I think Josh Hart has to be out there with the small ball lineups because of his physicality.
I agree with that. Along with that, I think that he's got some value as a scorer. He was the guy who he led the team in field goal attempts in this game by a decent amount. He had 13, next closest guy had 8. And there are going to be opportunities all over the court for him. One of the things that he does that's different than KCP is that he puts pressure on the front of the rim. Josh will get all basket and finish around the basket when given the opportunity. I have a piece coming out when this pod comes out for Silver Screen and Roll, where I talk about the difference between some of the sets they ran for KCP last year and what they're doing with the offense now. They're running a lot of 1-4 high, which is when you got, you know, a point guard in the middle of the court and then 4 across the free throw line, so 2 guys on the elbows, 2 guys on the wings. And the, you know, podcast version, not being able to show it visually, is KCP is getting the ball like in the middle of the court when he comes off of those down screens rather than at the wing like he was last year. And it's putting him in situations where he needs to attack the basket, force the big to commit, and then you can dump it off to JaVale or lob it to him or anything like that. KCP is not confident enough and does not have good enough ball handling to be a really downhill type of player. Mm-hmm. Josh can get downhill, and that's something that with what they're doing that's new, along with the physicality and the ability to rebound and all of that, I think Josh actually has a lot of value as a scorer and as a guy who can threaten the rim in a way that maybe we didn't anticipate prior to the season. I think that this offense is a really good fit for what Josh does well.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I guess for me, I'm really nervous about the physicality of the small ball lineups. And I mean, we'll use this as a brief aside really quick. The Kyle Kuzma experiment at the 5 has not looked good so far.
You know what's funny, Anthony, is after the game, post-game conference, and there were only a couple of questions, and it was kind of like, that's it? And, you know, they were like, all right, thanks, everyone. And Luke was like, nothing else? No, nothing about Kuzma at the 5? Like, he was so much better today. So Luke, like, volunteered all this. He was not asked this. He was bothered. And, I guess I didn't see it. And Kuz probably struggled more in the first quarter when he checked in than he did later in the game. So maybe it just left the first impression on my mind. I didn't see him particularly thriving, but Luke was very happy with his fronting the post and all of that throughout the game. So, you know, yeah.
I guess to that point, and look, the KCP and Hart conversation is going to be something that we're going to come back to over the course of the preseason. I think this is important to talk about this Kuzma dynamic here. I think when it comes to Kuzma, I thought where he improved tonight was utilizing quickness versus trying to body people. And I think that kept him out of some of the foul trouble that you saw in the first game. And I think when Luke does that, here's where Luke's ability as a communicator and as understanding players comes into effect, is I think he's really, he says that. He goes out of his way to praise Kyle Kuzma after the game, in large part to kind of like lift him up, because I'm sure it's frustrating for Kuzma to be put in this kind of awkward situation. And I don't think Kuzma has played very much five over the course of his lifetime. And he's put in this spot against maybe the toughest front line that he's going to see all year. And I'm sure it's been frustrating. So I think kudos to Luke for kind of recognizing that. And if that's what he was doing, that's just really good coaching. That's really good leadership.
For sure. Yeah. You want to, and there was another instance, just, it's a different guy, but to further the point, kind of your coach on the floor in Rondo, there was a play where Kuz made an extra pass and they got either free throws out of it or got a dunk out of it. So they did something where Kuz probably takes that shot last year, but he made a nice pass and they scored out of it. And Rondo dapped him up after that, like went out of his way to be like, yo, that was a great pass. Yeah. And so, cause that's important to unlock that in Kuz as well. So having that from both the coach and the coach on the floor type of guy, that's going to be very valuable in terms of, you know, this is where the leadership that we've talked about coming into the season can start to show itself in a real on-court type of sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was very pleased with tonight's game. I mean, like,
me too.
Second half aside, like, who cares? LeBron didn't play. Like,
well, and even the first part of the second half was totally fine. It was once they started putting in like the third unit type guys that it kind of fell apart a bit. So
yeah, I walked away from tonight's game last night, by the time people are listening to this, perfectly fine with what I saw. And it all you need to see, like, this is the rare stretch of this campaign that is the 2018-2019 season, that you can actually really focus on progress over wins, right? Once the season kicks off, then you got to get back and focus on wins. But for right now, seeing progress from game one to game two, that really matters.
Very much so. Yeah. And you know, like, Ingram did not have a loud box score type of game, but I've been really happy with him on the defensive end. Like, to me, that's, if he's going to play winning basketball, that's where it's going to start. And, you know, you like you said about JaVale, just the overall identity of the team, just really happy with what I'm seeing there.
Yeah, all of the starters had their plus minuses were on the plus side. So that's a good sign. We're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the center situation, which, man, I'm nervous.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a second. Let's take a quick second here to talk about Mazuma USA. Again, we've been working here with Mazuma for about a month now. They have been really patient with me, and nobody really likes doing their taxes or figuring out their taxes and understanding what you can and cannot write off. I'm trying to figure out whether or not I can write off a PS4, maybe a few new suits. I guess maybe announcing this over the airwaves so that those in charge of the taxes and audits and stuff like that might come back and get me. So if you guys are listening, I didn't actually say that. I'm totally joking. But Mazuma has been incredible. They have an incredible team of CPAs, bookkeepers, and accountants. They're all here in the U.S. They're always available. If you have a small business and you're looking to get your finances in order and keep them looked after, starting at only $75 a month, their experts can keep track of all those business finances, including the bookkeeping, accounting, and then taxes that you might need. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the number that you're going to call for a free consultation. There's no strings attached to the consultation. Call 213-947-6926. Again, that's 213-947-6926. Write it down one more time, 213-947-6926. Mazuma is going to keep track of everything that you might need. So it's Mazuma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. So JaVale McGee to this point has looked really good, right?
Yes.
He has been like above and beyond what I thought, and you and I were, you convinced me to be high on JaVale McGee coming into the season. So kudos to you for that. Good call on that. Zubats comes in. He's been a disaster. he's not good, man. Like, and here's the thing. Maybe at some point I'll need to talk to Eric Pincus about this to try to figure out if there is maybe a contractual issue why they went with Zubats over Thomas Bryant. We haven't seen and we won't see Mo Wagner at all. But still, like, if you're hoping, because that was one of the things that as I was watching the game and I was tweeting for Silver Screen, I made the point that, like, the more I watch this team, the more I feel like the Lakers need to make it a minor move just to bring in a steadier backup center, right?
Yeah.
Just to kind of not anybody that it's going to cost an arm and a leg to get, just somebody just kind of like steady out the bench rotation here.
I'm not going to complain about this all year. I just want to get this out into ether once. How good of a center combo would a Brook Lopez, JaVale McGee combo have been?
Although I don't know if Brook would have gotten the minutes that he would have wanted. Now that we see...
Sure. No, maybe Brook doesn't sign that, right? Yeah. But but if it were possible, you know, yeah, that would have been a hell of a rotation there.
I'd even take Tarik Black.
Like, yeah, he's playing overseas, man. And that's the thing. There are guys out there, especially in a league that's becoming increasingly wing centric, where the Lakers have a great deal of depth. Finding a guy who can give you serviceable minutes as the backup, like I'm very much looking forward to like what Mo Wagner can do.
Yeah.
But I was there watching his pregame, routine, and he's still got a big leg brace on, and he attacked a closeout. This is like him by himself, and he dunked, and like the people there cheered. And he was like, oh, it's been a while since I've done that. So he ain't particularly close when he's a 6'10 dude that everyone cheers when he dunks, right? he's not close enough to coming back. And as a rookie, man, that's really tough.
Yeah.
To miss a whole training camp and a whole preseason. Like, even when he comes back, he's going to be starting from scratch. And like, it's hard enough anyway when you're a rookie, much less when you start out behind like that. So to me, Mo is a guy, like, anything we get out of him, at least the first half of the season, is gravy for me. So yeah, they very much needed a dependable backup.
I don't know with Zubats, and this is one of the conversations I had with Adam. I believe it was after we finished recording. I think Zubats is lost. I think they need to just tell Zubats, stop focusing on losing weight and just get big. Like, just he looks so movable. Like, he's so malleable, and now, like, that's going to hurt him on the defensive end, and I maybe that it's just a failed experiment and you cut your losses at some point here and trying to even think about relying on the guy. But that's the only option that the Lakers have, and you know, maybe Michael Beasley gets better over the course of the preseason and heading into the regular season, but that's a pretty glaring hole. And you tweeted it out during the game, and it sent me into one of my freakouts that I stepped away. I stepped away from the keyboard. I just said, I'm not going to tweet about it. I'm not going to freak out. But if JaVale McGee gets hurt, this season takes a major hit.
Yeah, man. And he's a guy that hasn't played over 15 minutes in 5 years.
Yeah.
So I asked Luke about that today, actually. You know, JaVale has an asthmatic condition. Mm-hmm. And I said, are there any minutes restrictions that are medically based, whether it's either total minutes that he can play per game or how long a shift can be? And Luke said no. He said that just the way that they play, JaVale's going to get tired. Guys are going to get tired. And if he is tired and has the right way for the time that he did that. But like, if we can get 25 minutes out of JaVale, like, they're gonna need the 25 minutes out of JaVale. Like, that'd be ideal. I don't know if he can play 25 minutes, but if he can, like, it's so easy to see what a great fit he is with all of these shot creators, and he's got some issues defensively, but he can protect the rim at the very least. And relative to the rest of what the Lakers have at that spot, like, he's a really important player this season.
I knew he was. I mean, in order to be a good role player, you have to have good hands and you have to be able to catch the ball and catch it in traffic and go up. Like, this is Zubats. This is the thing that frustrates me the most with Zubats on offense, is that, like, he gets into a clutter and his head gets way either in front of or to the side of or behind his feet. He gets off balance and he loses the ball, or he's not able to finish or whatever. But I've really been blown away by how great JaVale's hands are. His catching radius is infinity.
Right.
Remember, I don't know if you ever saw this. This is like a random callback or call up, whatever people want to call it. They did, when Calvin Johnson was in his prime, they did like a catch radius thing with him.
Uh-huh, I remember this.
And it was like two buses stacked up on top of each other. And I'm thinking, like, I want to see this exercise with JaVale, because it's like, it's the size of a two-story house.
He's got one of the great catch radiuses of all time, really.
Yeah.
Like, between his athleticism and wingspan, and just, he's so light on his feet. He's been talking about recently about how he went vegan a year or two ago, and he lost like 20 pounds, and how he wants to be the fastest center in the league, and he wants to be able to, yeah, he's up there for sure. I don't know, man. Like, part of it, he's a favorite for me because I feel like he's kind of unfairly picked on, but he's actually legitimately a good offensive player. And a solid, a serviceable defensive player. Like, he's way beyond the meme that he's been made into. And we're starting to see that. And, like, put that catch rate. Like, you got a guy, you got guys who can make any pass paired up with the guys who can catch any pass. A guy who can catch any pass.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing. He's a leading scorer on the team right now through two preseason games.
Yeah, and efficiently, too. I mean, he had a finish today where he basically spun 360 and finished through contact on it. Like, that was, I watched that play, and Jim was sitting there next to me, and it was one of those, like, holy shit moments. It was just like, oh my God, did he just do that? Because it was first it was a LeBron, I think it was a pocket pass that he threw, right? That he threw it from like the free throw line area, and JaVale caught it with his back to the basket kind of, and spun and finished through contact. And you're just like, gosh, if and this is the thing, though, if he didn't have the asthmatic problem and was able to play more minutes, he wouldn't be on the Lakers at the rate that he's at. So that's kind of the issue there. But with the Lakers backups, you know, maybe they rely heavily on Michael Beasley. Maybe Kyle Kuzma figures it out as the year goes along. What we haven't seen to this point has been LeBron checking the biggest player on the court. We haven't seen that yet. So maybe as they get to games that actually matter, he's willing to do that a little bit more. We'll see. But yeah, it's going to be something that's always going to be in the back of our minds. Like, JaVale, please stay healthy. Please stay healthy. Please stay healthy.
For sure. And even with that, I still think if they're going to make a move with that 15th roster spot before the buyout deadline and all of that, that's where they need to address.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's at the point now where I'm like, I'm fine with waiving Zubats. If they want to add a more steady, a steadier center, and then also have the space to add a buyout guy later, then it's been real, Zoo.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of at my wit's end with Zoo at the end of last year. And so this isn't me overreacting to two preseason games. I just don't think he's an NBA player. I just don't think he has it. He's a nice kid, but I don't think it's more complicated than that. He's just not good enough to be an NBA player. Mason Plumlee went 11 for 11 today.
Yeah.
And that's not obviously all on Zoo, but a lot of them were.
Yeah, and especially in the second half.
Yeah,
he was getting exactly everything.
Right. I don't even think, did Zoo even play in the first half? Maybe he did, but no. Plumlee and just this is Zoo's third year, man. Like, yeah, he looked like a rookie out there, and yeah, he was making rookie mistakes and blowing coverages and all that. But yeah, I just don't see it. I would love to be wrong, but I just don't see it with Zoo.
I want to bring up one more player before we go here, and before we have a little bit of fun, I'm going to introduce a new segment on Game Nights. Lance Stephenson.
Yes. Yes.
So here's the thing with Lance that I was trying to find a way to phrase this. He's going to be a fan favorite. He does things that get the crowd going. The one-on-one isolation plays, the way he skips around on the court, how happy he seems to be out there at all times, the amount of trash he talks, the flair that he plays with. He's going to be somebody that fans are going to like. I will grant that. But, like, I feel like the success that he has comes at the sake of what the Lakers are trying to do as a team collectively, in the amount that he dribbles, the way that the ball stops with him, and all that stuff. Either talk me off the ledge here, or maybe confirm what I'm watching from Lance Stephenson. I don't see the fit with this team based on the way that he wants to play and the way that he's always played to be successful.
So, like what you said about him being a fan favorite and all of that, there's two. So my analyst brain, he drives me crazy.
Yeah.
My fan brain, he cracks me the hell up, dude. And it's not like laughing at him. He is delightful. Lance Stephenson is a delightful basketball player. It's no secret that I'm not a fan of the signing, and we've seen some of the reasons why. He was like a minus 28 or something in the first game. He was like a minus seven
tonight.
Yeah. And all of what you said about him dominating the ball and all that, like that's absolutely true. He is just very fun, though. He is, if you look at basketballs from strictly an entertainment point, Lance Stephenson is an entertaining basketball player. Mm-hmm. It's funny because alongside all of the shot creators that we've been talking about and that we've seen, we saw so much of the overpassing in the first half, his negative attributes stick out all the more because of that and surrounded in that. He is, from what I know of Luke, he is basically the antithesis of a Luke Walton basketball player. And so I'm curious to see how that manifests. I did think Lance gave them pretty good minutes in the second quarter of the game, mm-hmm. With the second unit and all of that. I thought that
minus seven is better than minus 28.
Well, it is. And much of the minus seven in today's game was with the third unit, right? And they lost that big lead in the second half. So, but yeah, all in all, I don't know. I've said my piece regarding Lance, and I think we've seen some of the, and this has been while he shot well, right?
Yeah.
He shot reasonably well. He's normally like a slightly sub 40% type shooter, or right around 40%.
Yeah.
So when his shot doesn't fall and he's doing this, it ain't going to be so cute and delightful, you know?
Yeah. He's basically, in order for Lance to work, two things. He made a play. He got fouled on the play, and then it wound up being like a putback dunk for Beasley that didn't count because Lance got fouled. But it was a quick decision. He was at the top of the key. He got the ball. He drove by the initial defender and then met, I think it was Jokic, at the rim, switched from his right to his left hand, got the crowd into it and stuff. Like, that's the Lance I want. Just make your decision quick. Just go, right? And I thought in his minutes where the second unit or third unit, whichever, it's hard to really tell which unit it was, but when he was out there, the pace of play really slowed, and I think that has a lot to do with the amount that he wants the ball in his hands, and that's going to be something that has to improve if he wants to figure out a way to fit with the way that the Lakers want to play. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, is Lance really going to change or be a different? I mean, yes.
Hope. Please give me hope.
I mean, saying a guy at this point in his career, like, he needs to improve at, like, he's the dude he's going to be. Yeah. And on some nights, that's going to be great. When he's got it going, it's just, for this team in particular, the shot creator thing on one hand, you don't really need him to do that because you got so many other guys that do that. And then on the other, like, just defensively, off of the ball, he can fall asleep, and I don't know, man. I said this the other day, but he reminds me of some of like the worst attributes of Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah.
And again, this is my analyst brain, my fan brain. I was even on Press Row. We were cracking up. So
the way, like, he hops, like,
just like all of it. He's just like every second.
Yeah.
There was one play. I've watched a decent amount of basketball in my life. There was one play he got fouled on that I had no idea what he was doing on it. Like, good, bad, successful, unsuccessful. Pretty much every basketball play, I understand what was supposed to happen, at the very least on that play. He just, like, drove. It wasn't toward the basket. It was kind of, like, off to the side. Like, and he just drove in that direction. And he ended up getting tripped at the end of it. But he drove, like, right into
I know what play you're talking about.
And he got up and he looked at his hand. I don't know if he scraped his hand on the floor or something, but like, I watched that play. I was like, I have no idea what he was going for on that. You know, he got fouled, so it didn't matter. But yeah, no, dude's hysterical. I don't want to spend the whole season lamenting him. The least I can say is he entertains the hell out of me.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of entertaining, let's end this thing on a high note. And this is going to be the beginning of a new, I guess, brief segment here. It's just going to talk about the funniest thing that we saw from the game that we just watched. I'm ripping this almost directly from Dan Levitar. They do their funniest thing from the sports weekend. I'm doing this from funniest thing from the Lakers game. This time, as I warned you, I'm going to let you go first.
So it was Isaac Bonga's surrender cobra after passing up the potential game winner and the crap that the guys were giving him in the locker room for it afterward. Just like he passed it and then like the crowd's like, oh, and then he goes, oh no, like what have I done? And it was funny because he made like the first good move of his career when he attacked. A few people said it looked like a travel on TV. They were on the other side of the court, so I'll take their word for it. But I thought he did a nice job of attacking and closeout, made a nice spin move, had a nice assist or had a play to, he had another nice pass to Travis Ware.
Decent stretch of basketball for
Bonga. Yeah, he played. That was his best stretch by far.
Yeah,
that he's played as a Laker, summer league or otherwise. But yeah, when he like made that swing pass, and then just immediately the hands go to the top of the head, like oh no, just like yeah,
it was the basketball equivalent of verbal diarrhea when you know that you said something that you shouldn't have said, and like you, as the words are leaving your mouth, your hands are like actually trying to claw them back in.
Yes, exactly.
He released that pass, and it was just like no. No.
And it was funny. Is like on press row, everyone's like, please don't go to overtime. Please don't go to overtime. Yeah. Please don't go. And I'm like, you're all a bunch of Stu Lances around here, man, complaining about like the best job in the world. Like, shut up. I hope this goes to double OT.
All right. My funniest thing. So I had one that had to do with this play. Dave McMenamin called Isaac Bonga Mo Bonga after the game, like he tweeted it out, so it's like Bonga number five, like that's that was the thing. But Reggie Miller called Lance Stevenson Lance Armstrong today, and I'm trying to think of two athletes who have less in common than Lance Stevenson and Lance Armstrong.
Yeah,
I can't.
Pretty much their name, and that's about it.
I'm not gonna make the joke I was about to make there, but they, I can't think of two athletes that have less in common. Reggie Miller's out there, Lance Stevenson with the big play, lighting up this Lakers crowd. He was like all fired up about it, and even Kevin Harlan was like, that's you know what, we'll just move on.
Just roll with it, yeah.
Even Jen was watching it, and she's like, the cyclist? So that's what I found funny. Let us know if you – this is going to be a new segment, so let us know if you find anything else that – oh, also, because it's on my Twitter timeline right now, you're going to see this, or maybe if you haven't seen this already. But after Jokic subbed out of the game for the last time, he goes to the bench and he was chewing on invisible gum. I don't know if you saw this.
I did not see that.
It looked like he's a mouth breather, so it just looked like he was just getting his like his mouth a little bit of a workout. Like, all right, you got it. The jaw has to like close every so often, but that was fun. This was fun. This is going to be a good season, I think. I really feel strongly about my take that the Lakers are going to be tough to beat at home. There's a great crowd.
Yeah, no, it was electric in there, man. It was like a playoff game, and just the whole scene. Like, there are different sections where they see media, and then there's one that I call Siberia, which is above. It's by where the hockey jerseys are retired, and it is higher than any seat that there is. And and it's like that's where I had my first few games for sure, where I was seated, and even all of that was full. Like, all of the media spots were pretty much taken up for a preseason.
Oh man, it was crazy. And,
I saw the
pictures that people were taking from the locker room afterward, and it's gonna be bananas. The LeBron effect. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We went a little bit longer here because it was the first game that Pete and I got to talk about. We'll see if we can shut this. If we don't cut it short, then we don't cut it short. But thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Pete, for hopping on at such a late hour and giving as much responsibility as you probably have to finish out the rest of your night. We'll be back at it again tomorrow. The Lakers play again on Thursday. And we'll just keep rolling with this preseason. So have a great rest of your day, everybody.